There we go. It's Mae Bressel, and this is World Watchers International, coming out of KAZU-FM, Pacific Grove, California. It's broadcast number 632, December the 16th, 1984. 1 year ago this evening, I was discussing something that is very pertinent to the president's attempt now to have his ambassador to the Vatican. Many broadcasts are about the Vatican, and I was sharing with you the information of the motives for the attempted assassination on Pope John Paul II, May 1981. The reason, in 1981, I was saying that one of the reasons for the assassination attempt was to prepare for Central American bloodbaths with the Opus Dei, the wealthy Catholics, and the far right, to scare the Pope or put in a Pope who was even more conservative if possible. 2 years later, we are ready, 1984, 2.5 years later, for the total wipeout of the native population in Central America, thanks to Henry Kissinger and his team of special Nazis. I was talking about the narcotic battles of the Vatican, the murder of Vatican investigators, the looting of $225 million out of Italy down to Argentina, Michael Sindona, the Vatican banker, the missing money, and his role in ordering a judge to be murdered. He, along with David Kennedy from the United States, one of the high officials of the Mormon Church in Utah. I was discussing a lot of the Vatican scandals of drug running, the Cayman Islands, the offshore banking, the Panama banks, the Luxembourg links, and 146 companies that are affected by the Vatican portfolio and the money that has been missing from the Vatican down in the banks in the Bahamas. That was last year that I was talking about that. This week, or a week ago, the Vatican offered to pay a percentage of the Banco Ambrosiano debt to pacify them, and also to praise again the Opus Dei, the organization, the Opus Dei, the wealthy people who can put money into assuming some of the debts the Vatican has. We'll do more about the Vatican in a few moments. I was talking about Claire Sterling, the terror network, the group of people that propagandize about the Bulgarian plot to try to shoot the Pope, when it actually came from the far right and the CIA, and also about Grace Kelly and the Monte Carlo connections to the Vatican. These things have been ongoing investigations. They cover a broad area between assassinations, the mafia, money missing, scandals beyond description, week after week. And then to add to this insult, the president now wants an ambassador to the Vatican who can be a perfect bag man or money man, going back and forth inside of the Vatican to pay off their debts, assume the debts, and have a particular power base to put money in to overthrow all elections in Italy or other countries, because it can flow from the CIA into the Vatican, or the Pentagon to the Vatican. Then the Vatican priests can disperse it to all countries where anybody who seems just a little bit too left or middle or anti-nuclear missile can be offed or done away with. I was talking about those problems last year, and we'll be talking more about that in a few minutes. I just want to mention what's happened to Althea Flint. To update you, Larry Flint is still in the federal penitentiary in Springfield, Missouri. As of this evening, he is. Althea, his wife, went to see him in December, and she has to see a physician or the warden or her husband, all three, and she had a temper tantrum. Evidently, they didn't grant her wishes. And she was speaking by a telephone to one of the officials, and she didn't like the conversation, and allegedly, according to the newspaper, this is the story, threw a telephone at the receptionist and then knocked over the walk-through metal detector. Well, the woman weighs about 90 pounds, and the metal detector is something that you see at the airports. She was arrested by the FBI when she went back to Springfield just last week, and on January the 3rd, she's now out on bond with a possible 5 years in prison for that act. Keep in mind that Dan White killed the mayor and the supervisor and was out in less than 5 years. And the men were convicted for the Brinks robbery last week, the $11 million Brinks robbery. They won't tell where the money is, and the judge says, I know you're gleaming to get that money. And one of the men was given something like a 20-year sentence, and the other was given 5 years. So he can start spending the $11 million. I am saving a whole lot of articles on injustices and strict charges versus those who get off. And one night I'll do just a broadcast on the justice system. So that is what is hanging over Mrs. Flint. Last time when Larry was shot, she was very capable and ran Hustler and took care of the family and all the things that she had to do. But this time, if Larry's a target for his politics, then make sure that his wife goes along with him. And the circumstances are just beyond description, and I don't want to tell too much about it on the air, but you can imagine being kept confined all this time, what must be happening there. I don't know the details, but when I do, I'll pass them on if I can. We'll keep it running and let you know. But that's the latest charge, up to 5 years in a federal penitentiary for knocking down a flimsy little thing that a detector in the hall. Now, I wanted to just mention two things before I get to the Vatican and some other important subjects. I have a list of topics here for this week, but I'll take them one at a time as much as time allows. It's just too much. I mentioned the suspicion that I had about Dennis Wilson being possibly a murder victim. I'm asking these questions and just a few that I want to know before I'm satisfied about this case, because I've watched all the major rock musicians being offed and eliminated. And they were certainly controversial. Controversial enough, though, so the Beach Boys, July 4th, were at opposite poles, James Watt wanting Wayne Newton, and I don't have to go into his background for you, as against the Beach Boys playing in Washington, D.C. Now, there's one article in San Francisco Chronicle about Dennis Wilson. It said Dennis Wilson was responsible for one of the group's darkest secrets. Me and Charlie, we founded the family, he said, that he talked about founding the Manson family. He made a record with Charles Manson on the 2020 album. Dennis Wilson is credited as the author. He describes his experiences with Charles Manson, sex, 5, 6, 7 or more people. Manson had a gift for attracting young women into his lair. Here's a guy just out of the federal penitentiary where he spent most of his life. And then he says, I guess he let the drugs get away with him. This article says there are occasional references to Wilson and Manson sharing a house together. Now, keep in mind, if he founded the family, that the danger here is not knowing Charles Manson. His life is an open book. It's Charles Watson with his links to the military, to the high officials of our government, to a Beverly Hills law office, to his Texas connections, his family. He was the choir boy, the Eagle Scout, the guy that did all the killings. He's now the priest at San Luis Obispo who wants to get out. He's the stabber and killer. So if he founded the family, then the danger was that Dennis Wilson knows Charles Watson even more than Charles Manson. The group's sex was interesting. The references to them sharing a house. What he knew at this time is terribly important. What he saw and knew when they shared a house, there were two things about Wilson's past. One was the antagonism of the establishment music against the California sound and the last large group. The Beatles are gone. Well, you can't consider the Rolling Stones as part of that scene at all. They're the establishment gang. But doing away with Elvis Presley and the Beatles and Dennis Wilson of Beach Boys, the Beach Boys will go on, but it won't be the same. This was the surfer, the one that was laid back, that was experimenting in the drugs, who was familiar with the Manson family and shared a house with them, did recordings, and they parted company, of course, before the Sharon Tate murders. But at what date? We don't know how, at what point they were parting company. Now, Bill Oster, O-S-T-E-R, was the fellow who allegedly owned the yacht where they were when he drowned. He described that he appeared to be clowning Wilson when he dove into 12 feet of water. He did not resurface after the dive. He poked his hand above and waved. I saw bubbles. He popped up, waved his hand. I saw the body slip. I thought he was clowning. I knew he had to come up for air, and the body was recovered 50 minutes later. Now, the coroner is saying that he had doubled the amount for legal alcohol when you're driving. So anybody who's watching this whole thing and knows that the guy is drunk, and he's waving his hand and the bubbles are coming, I should think, would dive in as fast as he can, because Wilson didn't have on diving clothes. He had on cut-off jeans and wasn't prepared for this. Now, two people were interviewed that were at the yacht, Bill Oster, who had the yacht, and then the sheriff, Lee Davenport, not the people on the boat. He said they were in good spirits, no fight or argument. Before Wilson went in, no problem. How does the sheriff know? It's like Natalie Wood. All of a sudden, the sheriff's the spokesman for the incident. Then there's another interview with Nikki Morris, a person with a boat nearby. They always find these human interest people who have something to say, that he was in a good mood, he was diving for this and that. So what? Where were the people on the boat? There were four people on the boat: Dennis Wilson, Bill Oster, another person not named who was a female, and another person not named, and I don't know if it was a male or female. The Los Angeles Herald said that his wife called the boat at 4:30, that'd be the exact time that he was going under. A woman answered, and she was kind of rude. She said, "We've got some trouble here," and she slammed down the phone. That'd be the exact time that he was bubbling and waving, and nobody jumped in for him. And at 5:30, 1 hour later, according to another account, he was picked up. The medical examiners found a gash on the drummer's forehead. The coroner said the very day that he died, that didn't contribute to his death. He died as a result of drowning. Now, there was a story in the paper today about a man who was sitting in a bar drinking. He fell off the stool, and the cause of death, according to the coroner in L.A., was that he fell and hit his head on the floor when he fell off the stool at the bar. Then a week later, 2 weeks later, a nephew has been charged with murder. He had hit his head, and he had a concussion and was bleeding in the brain before he went to the bar and fell off the stool. So did the falling on the floor kill him, or did the beating of the head before he went to the stool? You see, right away there's this instant conclusion with a very controversial person that who James Watt was fighting at and was embarrassing and was embarrassed by because of the controversy. Here's a guy, the coroner of Los Angeles, they're corrupt as they can be, immediately saying he was died of drowning, period. As I say, how would he know? Okay, he was on this friend's yacht. The question is, who were the friends and what did they know about? Now, he was at St. John's Hospital on Christmas Day. This is quite a coincidence, this Mr. Wilson, the new nominee for the Vatican, Ronald Reagan's long friend for 25 years, is on the board of St. John's Hospital. Coincidentally, St. John's is where Alfred Bloomingdale died when Vicky was dressed as a nurse visiting him. He was at St. John's on Christmas Day when a man and a woman visited Wilson. According to the doctor there, something came up and he became quite anxious and agitated. He walked off the unit. He was only in the hospital 2 days and was stressed. He wanted to be cleaned of alcohol and drugs or other drugs, and he was going to start his treatment. Now, who were the people that checked him out of the hospital? The big question is, a man and a woman were at the hospital and checked him out. He heard something. He was there for treatment. He wasn't there to be swimming and partying. And something agitated him that they told him. Now, where did they take him? Directly to a boat. The two people that checked him out of the hospital, because he's there for treatment. And how do you check out of St. John's? Because two people want you. So right then, two people take a man and woman. Now, the woman hung up on his wife. Is it the same woman who hung up on his wife, who she didn't identify or know by name, that went to pick him up at the hospital, or were a different man and woman on the boat than the man and woman at the hospital? In other words, two people took him. They said something to him. He was agitated, upset. He leaves with them. The description of the doctor was he was quite anxious and agitated. Why did they let him leave that hospital if he had checked in for that purpose, if he's trying to take care of those things? And then the other person, as I say, hangs up on his wife. So the open-ended question on that is, was the woman the same woman in both cases, and was the man the same people on the boat, the ones that took him out of a hospital where he went for treatment for drugs and alcohol, supplying alcohol for him, and he has a hit on the head and drowns in the water right outside, on the 12 feet of water outside. Now, the Beach Boys are controversial. Right away after they died, there were newspaper articles, just hints. Within one day, one big story and big black letters in the San Jose Mercury, A Beach Boys generation, Wilson's death ends the endless summer. Now it's over. Okay, the rock and roll, the king is over. Elvis and John Lennon said, that ends it. As if it spot ideas, this ends the endless summer. Forget it, kids. Then another article, They Love You, California, but kids want a new song. Now, the excuse for this big article was another song on California, but the wording was very clear. It came right after Dennis Wilson's death, putting these stories, big articles, about a new California sound, and that ends the endless summer. Now, I mentioned Wayne Newton, who's controversial. He doesn't have to compete anymore with the Beach Boys. Forget it. Ronald and Nancy were at the Annenbergs. They got message of Dennis Wilson's death. They were very anxious to cooperate with his wife and have him buried at sea. That assures no autopsy for the brain or anything that could have happened to him, the bang on the head. He's fed to the sharks. That's the old Granada trip they're using. Feed him to the sharks and dispose the body, and there's no way now to ever know what caused that bang on his head or how deep it was, like the fellow that fell off the stool. It would be like taking the guy at the bar who fell off the stool and taking him out the Pacific Ocean and dumping them and telling you he died because he was drunk. The only reason they have a murder charge is because the guy's body was preserved. And I don't think when you're fighting people like Wayne Newton or competing with the mafia gang from Vegas and the crooners, the gang that have worked their way up into the system for years, that seem to have the monopoly on who lives and who dies, and James Watts, when you go against those people, you deserve an honest autopsy of every part of your body and no BS from the LAPD. They should bring in other people to examine them. Now, I mentioned before that Marvin Pancoast said when he was arrested that he had been in the home of Sharon Tate. Now, Robert Steinberg, the fellow who said he had the Vicky Morgan sex tapes, is a law partner of Vincent Bugliosi, the man who prosecuted the Manson family story in L.A. and kept out of it all the links to the intelligence community. Vicky Morgan, the woman who was murdered, her attorney was Paul Caruso, the same attorney for Sue Atkins from the Manson case. And with this thing, I mentioned briefly last week, with this matter coming to court with Pancoast, if he's let out one hint, what did Dennis Wilson see about the house at Sharon Tate's or the multiple sex parties that were going on, and did he participate? How many people did he know? Because Sharon Tate and Sue Atkins and members of the Manson family all knew each other previously to the murders, and they were up with Anton LaVey up in San Francisco and the witchcraft rituals, and they all had familiarity with members of the Manson family with people from Sharon Tate's home. Now, in The Rebel, the article by Bill Turner, it mentions that in Sharon Tate's home there were video movies of VIPs. I know there were, but who was on those tapes? They belonged to the LAPD. Would Dennis Wilson know who was on those tapes? He was close to that scene, mentions multiple sex parties with them. Here they have VIPs, and this involves, Vicky's tapes involve Edwin Meese and Ronald Reagan's cabinet high up in the Reagan administration, if not Reagan himself. Would he know who these people were if they were involved in these sex parties? Sheriff Peter Pitches and Ed Davis have covered up the entire Manson story, of course, with the overtones of the counterintelligence operation of law enforcement in L.A. So the story of Dennis Wilson goes much farther into what he knew and who was against him and how much is going to be covered up, all of it probably, because, as I say, there's no body now to go further into it. Now, there's a story in the Washington Times this last week on Mr. Wick. His name is Charles Zwick, actually, of the U.S. Intelligence Agency. Mr. Zwick was born in Cleveland and went to the University of Michigan and got a law degree from Western Reserve and then began to work with Tommy Dorsey, who hired him as a music arranger and lawyer. He was the lawyer for Tommy Dorsey. He also, Tommy Dorsey was Frank Sinatra. And Frank Sinatra has competed with all the new music that came along, you know, holding on, and ends up the king, you know, at Kennedy Center and the gala and the inaugural parties, because, as I say, there is no Elvis, there's no Beatles, and now there's no 4th of July with the original, the gang of the surfer, the one, the image of the beach surfer, Dennis Wilson. It's symbolic. The Beach Boys will play again, but That part is over with. He worked with them, and then he went to work for the William Morris Agency as a personal manager. Okay, William Morris Agency as well. Years later, Marvin Pancos worked before he went, and or another person in the closet who's hiding. He's been charged with breaking open Vicky Morgan's head. You'll pardon the phrases like feeding to the shark or splitting the skulls, but that's what it's really down to, the nitty-gritty. Well, Mr. Zwick of U.S. Intelligence Agency was part of the managing of Tommy Dorsey and Frank Sinatra years back. And as I say, there's these stories of the multiple sex. Incidentally, Vicky Morgan's attorney for Marvin Mitchell was Marvin Mitchelson before he was called to the White House and put on the carpet. And Mr. Morgan Mason, the son of actor James Mason, Reagan's special assistant for political affairs, met Mitchelson and made him stop representing Vicky Morgan in this palimony suit. Well, now I read that Mr. Mason is now the manager for Michael Jackson. If you wonder why Jackson's up for 12 awards and he's the new kingpin, Michael Jackson is managed by Mr. Mason, who put Mitchelson on the board for not helping not Marvin Pancos, for Vicky Morgan when she was trying to break open the Bloomingdale story before Pancos had her killed or was part of the killing. I think it's interesting that, as I say, Dennis Wilson was out there at St. John's, as was Alfred Bloomingdale, and Mr. Wilson of the Vatican, the new envoy to the Vatican, is on the board of St. John's Hospital. Also, the fellow who has, just as a coincidence, the fellow who has the boat that Dennis Wilson died on is an engineer, and Mr. Wilson was a graduate, an engineer from Stanford. I don't know what, if there's, Stanford research was into Jonestown. Stanford had their finger in so many experiments and counterintelligence operations. It'd be interesting to know if there it's all coincidental or if there's any connection between some of these institutions and the people who entertain these musicians, and then they die afterwards. I've learned that where my instincts followed certain stories, I was never led astray. I followed them pretty carefully, and they turned out to have more truth in them than just a paranoia about coincidences. The ones that I bring up, I take pretty seriously and follow them through, even if it takes 5 or 10 years, more pieces of the puzzle then come together. I do want to go on now to Jesse Jackson. I think that's an important story, and tell you about my opinion on Jesse Jackson's prominence at this time. Important article in the Washington Post. It was published December 15th, about 2 weeks before Jesse Jackson went over to the Middle East, to Syria. It said, Chile's political crisis reaches a stalemate. The ideology and class divide Chilean opposition forces. And the article says that the reason Augusto Pinochet has so much power with no hint of relinquishing power is that there's public apathy, or there's a lack of clear motivation of what to do, or the middle class is split between their loyalties, that they don't want a change, they don't know what to do about change, and there's more discontent in the country than ever, but there's polarization among the middle class. They describe the predominantly middle class alienation combined with a large sector of the poor and unemployed that can't work together, the right or left, that makes it possible for this dictatorship to continue in spite of repression. And about 60 people just died during the last anti-government protest, but only Pinochet has power because the other side is split. Now, the very day that Jesse Jackson came home with Mr. Goodman, his great feat of rescuing Mr. Goodman, this Wall Street Journal was already attacking him. You create a hero and then you break him down, and they had the stories ready to print the day that he came out. They didn't wait an hour later. One story in the Wall Street Journal, this is January the 4th, Jackson secured down pilot's release and steals the spotlight from Mondale. That's what Ronald Reagan wants, and I'm sure he's more than pleased with the result. Another long article in Wall Street Journal, What Makes Jesse Jackson Run? And this is a story about Jesse Jackson. There was a biography. I don't have it. I'll have to get it. Jesse Jackson, The Man, The Movement, The Myth by Barbara A. Reynolds. But all of this was ready for press. By the time he got home, these stories were ready to go. And it's about the man and the myth. It says, it tells about his backyard experiences when he was a kid, his trauma of having found out that he was illegitimate and that his real father lived next door and had a wife and children, that he would wave over to the house over there. And then 2 years later, his mother married a Mr. Jackson and he took his name, but he had to see his father with his wife and children next door that didn't raise him. And this is the explanation in the book of an instant analysis of how he was a quarterback at North Carolina A&T State and worked his way through college and decided there was a fierce drive to excel, which makes sense to get there one way or the other. It tells how he went down to the Christian Leadership Conference and saw Reverend Abernathy, and it explains that Mr. Abernathy said that Jesse Jackson seemed to think that he would succeed or take over Mr. King's place, but they said no, he could never take over. He said Mr. Abernathy's recommendation to Mr. Jackson was immediate. He hired him on the staff at the organization there, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. But after he was hired, he was aggressive and impertinent, and he irritated Martin Luther King. And shortly before King's assassination on April 4th, 1968, in Memphis, Mr. King and his staff were heatedly debating strategy of the Poor People's March in Washington, and they were arguing with Jesse Jackson. There were disagreements. And Martin Luther King said to Jackson, "Jesse, it may be necessary for you to carve your own individual niche in society. Don't bother me. Don't bother me." And right after that, Martin Luther King came home and was dead. And he said, what did Mr. Jackson did after Martin Luther King's assassination remains confused and controversial. What other members of the King entourage remember most vividly was his instinct to jump into the national publicity spotlight. Now remember, J. Edgar Hoover had literally planned the murder of Martin Luther King, told him to commit suicide and help everybody out. And if not, he had succeeded in deciding which blacks would follow Martin Luther King. He didn't like Martin Luther King. And I mentioned last week he had handpicked Samuel Riley Pierce. But goodness knows who else he had picked, like Andrew Young and Jesse Jackson, who were there at the balcony when Martin Luther King was murdered. So it tells that Martin Luther King was suspicious of them, and then afterwards, he stepped right in and took the spotlight as if he is the new person to take over. He had a press conference, and Andy Young and Ralph Abernathy came back from the hospital and said, "Martin is dead," recalls Mr. Williams, a top King aide who is a Georgia State representative. And it was no time before Jesse was in the courtyard holding his press conference, like Mark Lane in Guyana. Later that day, Mr. Jackson excused himself. He went right to Chicago from Memphis. Still numb from the King aides were just confused and upset. They turn on the television, and there's Jesse Jackson on NBC's Today Show being interviewed in Chicago. That figures the NBC program selecting Jesse Jackson up there. Later that same day, Mr. Jackson addressed the Chicago City Council wearing a shirt stained with the blood of Mr. King, and it began a long start of Jackson publicity. This article goes on in Playboy. In November 1979, he told how he cradled the dead man's head in his lap, held Mr. King's head, and Mr. Abernathy and Mr. Williams said they didn't do anything of the sort. "I never saw Jesse get close enough to get bloodied. I don't know where he got the blood from. He wore this shirt. There's no doubt that I was the person that cradled the dying man," Mr. Williams said. He became a media freak and took the credit and went around talking and wearing a shirt with blood to say, as if I inherit the throne or the mantle for Martin Luther King. Paradoxically, Mr. Williams and Mr. Abernathy are endorsing Jackson for president, although they say that they would never let him be part of their own organization down there. They said, "I would never support Jesse Jackson to be president of the Martin Luther King organization," said Mr. Abernathy, "but that's a moral thing. I support him to be president of the United States. I won't let him in my organization, but I'll let him be your president." He must not think much of America if he thinks his organization is too moral to have Jesse Jackson, but the United States government isn't. "I'll let him run for president," but he says Jesse's cut to be a politician, and we hope he's grown. Then the Wall Street Journal continues with the story of Jackson's work, allegedly inspirational, a role model, but some people accuse him of using PUSH, People United to Save Humanity, for agreements with corporations like Coca-Cola, Ublin, Anheuser-Busch, and the St. Louis Sentinel accused him, it's a black-owned newspaper, of employing kickback approach, getting contributions to his organization from black business that would benefit by the agreements made with Coca-Cola and Anheuser-Busch. And the Sentinel said that Jackson was going to sue them for libel and drop the charges. And there was a question of a misappropriation of $2.2 million in federal grants. And that hasn't been satisfied yet. And as he came home from the Middle East, the Wall Street Journal already had this information. We'll take a 1-minute break now and get back to Jesse Jackson and then some of the other stories in the news.